Welcome to VOA's Campus Connection. I'm David Berg.
And I'm Lin Yang.
This is a brand new program that looks at what it's like to go to college here in the United States.
We'll look at several topics, including getting into school, how attending college is different in the United States, and how to get along with others.
We'll also talk to students who are in or who are ready to leave school here in the United States.
We'll hear students' perspectives on choosing a major, paying for school, and how your relationship with mom and dad changes.
And we also want to hear from you.
Find us on Facebook at VOA Asia and on voanews.com.
Just look for Campus Connection. One of the things we want to look at on our show is the application process. It's that time of year again here in the United States when many high school students will learn if their college application was successful.
This can be a stressful time for students and their families.
Waiting to hear if you got into your school of choice can be exhausting, but there are some things you can do to lessen the stress.
We talked to Kristen Frakia of the College Preparation for Magoosh, and she gave us 5 tips students and parents can use to navigate this tough time.
What are some of the things that families can do to avoid the stresses of either waiting to hear or once they have heard about college admissions?
One thing that I would suggest is that you should focus on other parts of your academic life. Once you are accepted, colleges are going to want to see your transcript. They are going to want to see that you continue to put your effort into extracurricular activities. Although rare, there have been instances when people have had their admissions revoked because they didn't keep up the same what they presented on their college application. The other side of it is that just because you've sent in your application doesn't mean that you aren't still in the application process. So there will be potentially interviews with the school or with alumni of the school that you would want to be preparing for. You want to keep in contact with the school. You never want to pester or berate them, but there can be ways that you continue to show demonstrated interest in the school, let them know how interested you are, visit the campus even after you've submitted the application, provide updates on your application. Let's say you won an award or something spectacular happened in your life that you want to update them on, you can continue to do that. So you should stay in touch with the process even after you've submitted your application until you hear.
How do you advise people to deal with the fact that they might not get into the school they wanted to go into?
Well, first of all, you should always make sure you have a diverse college list. You should be applying to more than one school. You should have schools that are your dream schools. You should have schools that are a good fit for you. You should have schools that a lot of people think of as safety schools or good bets that you feel like you can get guaranteed admission into. And all of these schools should be schools that you are interested in attending. There are hundreds and hundreds of colleges and universities out there. There are probably many that students have never heard of. Most high school students are familiar with a few that their parents have gone to or their friends have gone to or that have, big sports teams that they've heard of. But there are so many schools out there that might be a good fit for you and your interests. And there are lots of excellent resources from the U.S. government, particularly online, that you can, one is College Navigator that I would recommend, where you can take a look at schools and filter by what they offer and make sure that you have a really diverse college list. So that's the first thing. Hopefully you're never in a situation where you haven't gotten admitted to your perfect school and you need a plan B. But if that is the case, that's fine. There are other opportunities that you can pursue. There is community college. There is a gap year option. There are some schools that have rolling admissions. So you can continue to apply even after you've heard from the school that you had wanted to get into. But in an ideal world, you don't get into that situation ever because you've planned your college list out well, that you will get accepted into some schools that you want to attend.
Do you advise folks to limit exposure to social media in this time?
Yes, social media can be a big buzzkill during admission season, something that could be difficult for students to see. And if you spend a lot of time on Facebook and are searching for hashtags of all the schools that your peers have got into, you're likely going to get this inflated sense that everybody else is getting into the schools they want to, and it's just you who hasn't. So I do suggest that people try to stay off social media. I know that may be hard to do entirely, but at least stay away from going down that rabbit hole of searching for where everybody got into.
It's hard not to take rejection personally, though. If you apply to like UCLA or Stanford or Harvard or North Carolina or Duke or Florida and they say no, is it better to just realize, look, there's a lot of folks that are trying to get into this same place? And do you think your average high school teen is going to be able to process that kind of rejection?
You definitely should never take it personally, because there's so much that goes into the admissions decision from the other side. And that is so important to keep in mind, that they are making decisions, colleges are making decisions on how to fill a class, and they may be looking for certain profiles of students. They may be looking among certain groups, and it may have nothing to do with you at all and to be totally out of control. So the best thing that you can do is put your best foot forward in the college application process. Make sure you're presenting yourself as well as you possibly can on the application, and know that there are so many factors outside of your control, and it is not a reflection on you personally if you aren't accepted.
Kristen, is there any other advice you would give to either parents or people who are applying for college that we haven't talked about?
Yes. One of the biggest tips I have is make sure you have a plan for how you are going to pay for school. So some students will have been saving, or their families will have been saving. The FAFSA is super important to fill out. Make sure you're doing that on time if you need financial aid. And also make sure you apply for scholarships. Many students I've worked with don't realize that there are thousands of scholarships, both those offered by the institutions that they're applying to or through private organizations that are available out there. Again, the web is really handy here. You can do searches for scholarships that would apply to you, maybe based on your test scores, maybe based on your location, maybe based on your interests. And many of these scholarships don't have enough applicants. So apply for the scholarship, even if you don't think you will need them. It's always great to get some extra money to pay for college because it's very expensive. You want to make sure that you have a plan for how you're going to be financing your education in general.
Kristen Farakia is a spokesperson for Magoosh, which is a test and college preparation organization. She spoke to us from Berkeley, California.
Each week on our show, we want to introduce you to some of the colleges and universities here in the United States.
Boston College was granted a charter by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in 1863. It graduated its first class that included 22 students ranging from 11 to 16 years old.
Some of its well-known alumni include former House of Representatives Speaker Thomas Tip O'Neill, former Secretary of State John Kerry, and former Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz.
Lori London narrates this profile of Boston College, written by VOA Mandarin reporter Chu Wu.
In a typical Gothic architectural style, Gasson Hall is the most significant and symbolic building on the campus of Boston College. Students love it so much that they've put out nearly 6,000 pictures of the building on Instagram. Like Gasson Hall, the buildings on campus are the biggest indication that Boston College is a Catholic university. In fact, Boston College was founded by a group of Jesuit priests in 1863. John Mahoney, director of undergraduate admissions at Boston College for 27 years, explains.
And the Jesuits are part of a 500-year tradition of education. They operate high schools and colleges and universities all over the world. Here in the United States, There are 28 Jesuit colleges and universities. You probably are aware of Georgetown University. You're aware of a place like Fordham University in New York.
However, Mahoney explains not just Catholic students are enrolled in Jesuit colleges. This year, Boston College received more than 30,000 undergraduate applications from students of different cultures, religions, and backgrounds. Statistics from the university website show that international students make up 6.5% of the student body. Among them are many students from China. They say it's beneficial for them to take classes that they've only come to know after they arrived at Boston College. Mishu Ding, a freshman, says his school is known for offering classes that combine knowledge from different fields.
For example, I'm taking a class called Perspective. It's a combination of philosophy and theology. I find this class really interesting. It's a really popular class, especially among freshmen.
Choaluan Che, a sophomore student, agrees.
Maybe you wonder why he is taking philosophy or theology. That's because it's part of the requirements in our core curriculum. Regardless of your major, you have to take 15 classes in different departments. Philosophy and theology are two of them.
John Mahoney says that is at the heart of the Jesuit Catholics' method and practice of teaching. Students are not only taught practical skills, such as biology and business, but they also receive broader humanities education in Boston College.
Young people arrive on our doorsteps at the age of 18. They leave us at the age of 22. That's an important time in any young person's life. They're growing not just intellectually, but socially, emotionally, spiritually. And Jesuit education has this wonderful Latin phrase, and the phrase is cura personalis. We believe in education of the whole person. So not just your mind, but your heart, your soul.
Mahoney says Boston College hopes the students will be able to read correctly, think critically, and communicate efficiently and make better impact on their communities and even the society when they graduate from school. Lori London, VOA News in Washington.
You're listening to VOA's Campus Connection. Going away to college is often the first time that many young adults have spent any significant time away from their parents. But how much should you talk to mom and dad once you leave? Once a week? Once a month? Once a day?
In today's Relationship Talks, this is our exact topic. How much should you contact your parents? I feel like I can talk for a month about this topic.
Really?
Because my mom, especially, is the type of helicopter parent.
Uh-oh.
So she likes to check on me, you know, regarding have you eaten, how much clothes are you putting on, those kind of things.
Well, now, I can understand having an attractive young woman as a college student. You know, if it were my daughter, I'd be a little worried. I'd be like, you know.
But it's like you don't have to check on me on, you know, for three meals, if I haven't taken my three meals or something. Like, once I told her, you need to be a little bit more independent. And
yeah.
I think she's offended.
Well, you know, now see, my mom, I lived it because of family circumstances. Mm-hmm. I had no contact with my dad when I was in college, but I lived at home with my mom. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, I wish you'd leave me alone. Please leave me alone. My mom, see, now where I went, there was this area of this town called Sunnyside, and it's in Morgantown, West Virginia. That's where all the bars are, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was out doing stuff for J school, like shooting sports photography at the football game, and my mom would get real worried.
Oh, yeah.
She'd be like, what time are you going to be home? When are you going to come home? What time? And I'm like, Mom, look at me. Look at me. I'm as big as the defensive lineman.
I guess we all have our frustration on this matter.
Now, well, yeah, but you didn't have your mom going, I can't go to sleep until you come home.
Well, I think that's a lot of Asian parents. But in order to solve this problem or shed some light on this problem, today I talked to Marjorie Savage. She's the parent program director with the University of Minnesota and the author of the book, You Are On Your Own, But I'm Here If You Need Me.
Marjorie said there's no golden rule on how much you should talk with mom and dad. She says that it depends a lot on the families, and in some cases reflects the culture they come from.
And she said the key lies in managing expectations.
I think one of the key pieces is to think about setting up a routine, scheduling a weekly or every other day sort of phone call, just so that families know what to expect.
In 2016, the U.S. TV network CBS asked people, how often should an adult child call their mom? 35% of Americans said they think once a week is enough. Just 12% said they think it's okay to call your mom once a month or less.
But Marjorie Savage says that for international students who are dealing with everything from being far away from family and home to culture shock, a call to mom and dad can be comforting.
For one factor, simply having somebody to speak your home language with can become a really big issue. You just want to hear your own language and be able to speak in your home language. So I think that can be a factor. Also, the sheer investments that their families are making, and I think international students have a great understanding that their parents are investing in them, and therefore they need to hear more from them.
And as I have mentioned, in my culture, helicopter parents are relatively common. And to those unfamiliar with the term, it refers to the parents who hover and get overly involved in their children's lives.
Marjorie Savage said there is one key. Telling your parents what's going on and what you are thinking of doing is a good thing. But if you let the parents make the decision about what needs to be done, well, that's probably the reason that they're hovering.
I hope that students can gradually show those parents that they are capable of making decisions themselves. And the way to do that is simply to make the decisions and to let your parent know, this is what I'm doing about it. This is how it turned out. Everything is fine. And as parents start to see that their students are capable of making their own decisions and choices, they're much more likely to give them that freedom.
And she said, understanding where your parents are coming from can help.
Parents want to know that their kids are okay. That really is the basis of the whole contact, I think. Often, if you can text your parents on a daily basis and just check in, just touch base, say, things are going well here, you know, here's some success I had yesterday, and let it go at that, then the phone conversations tend to be less emergencies.
You can also make new technology your friend. Texting, FaceTime, selfies, WeChat. All of those are easy ways to drop a quick line without compromising your social life.
And actually, to my surprise, Marjorie said for most students, their relationship with their parents have improved since they moved to college. And the reason, they feel like they understand their parents better because they have a deeper comprehension of adulthood, responsibility, and relationship. So I guess distance does make the heart grow fonder.
Yeah, well, mom and dad don't look like they're so crazy once you find out what it's like to pay bills and, you know, have to have rent and deal with roommates and all that kind of stuff.
So what do you think? How often do you talk to your parents? How do you set your boundaries?
You can leave us a comment on Facebook. We're at VOA Asia.
To find out why some students here in Washington chose to study in the United States versus their own country or somewhere like the UK or Australia.
We sent our interns, Harry Chen and Sana Ali, to the University of Maryland at College Park, American University, and George Washington University here in D.C.
And they brought back student voices.
My name is Hieu Vo. I'm from Vietnam. I'm studying linguistics. Actually, my family was sponsored by my grandfather, who was a Vietnam veteran in the war. But the thing is, I have always wanted to come to the U.S. because, for me, mostly because of the education. In Vietnam, I wouldn't have such high-quality education compared to the U.S.
When name is Jeffrey. I'm from Taiwan. First of all, because I get a scholarship from my government, so I have an opportunity to apply to school in America. So firstly, I go to Syracuse for my master's degree, and then I decided to apply for a PhD program. And then I pretty like DC because I visited here before, so that's the reason why.
My name is Gina Ping. I'm from Singapore. I'm studying communication studies. But firstly, it was in English-speaking countries. I guess just a different experience because I was debating between US and the UK. I just thought that the college experience here would be something that appealed to me more.
My name is Steve Kim. I'm studying choral conducting in the School of Music. I do live in the States, but I did go back and forth between Korea and the States here. I'm at the school here because I love music. There's limitless opportunities to study here that I might have not received when I was in Korea. I first came here when I was 7. I just think that I have just lots of freedom in this country to just live out my dream.
So my name is Shen Ya, and I'm from China. I'm studying journalism here in AU. My parents think that U.S. has a higher level of education, and also the economics here is more like developed than the other countries.
My name is Zexingzheng. You can call me Jason if you want. My major is geology. For me, I think the atmosphere, like the educational atmosphere, is pretty good in here. And as the resource, the education resource is good.
My name is Ray Ching, and I'm from China, and I'm a freshman here. that was like kind of my only option because I didn't apply to any other schools in the other countries. Yeah, because I think that's like the fashion and norm kind of to come to the U.S.
So my name is Chao. It's actually Zichao. I'm studying the mechanical engineering first year of the graduate school. I pretty like the TV episodes, the movies in America, so that's the culture I like.
To see video of these students and some other folks who told us why they came here to study, log on to the VOA Asia Facebook page. One of the big decisions every student faces when they come to college is choosing a major.
Many factors can affect the decision, including money, passion, interests, and culture background.
We asked a couple of our interns here at VOA, Harry Chen and Zach Marcus, to join us to talk about why they chose the major that they did. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you for having us.
All right, Harry, we'll start with you. You are a graduate student, are you not? And you're finishing up your program in multimedia journalism?
Oh, I already graduated last December, so I have a master's right now.
Okay, and you went to City University of New York?
Yes, Graduate School of Journalism.
Okay, and Zach, you're at the University of Maryland, right up the street from our headquarters here.
Yeah, up in College Park.
And you're a senior?
Yes, I'm a senior.
Okay, and you're getting ready to graduate?
Yeah, I'll be graduating in May.
Exciting time.
All right, well, let's start with you, Harry. Why journalism? Why did you pick that particular major versus engineering or, you know, chemistry or medicine or anything else?
I think it was pretty much decided by fate because when I was growing up, my science math skills were really weak. So I knew that I had really a good language command. I was acing in school, top student in English and Chinese, so I knew I definitely had some flair in there. So coming to the United States, I feel like by declaring a major, I have better chance getting admitted to a school rather than just undeclared. So I wanted to do something that it's kind of taking advantage of my strength. So that's why I did journalism, because I growing up also feel that I had this natural affection to working journalists.
Now, Zach, you took a slightly different path to the Fourth Estate. You started off in engineering, right?
Yes, I started in engineering, and then I transferred to the journalism program later.
And now you told me, you were telling us earlier that several members of your family are engineers. Yeah. It's kind of the family business.
Yeah. One of my uncles and all of my cousins did engineering. So about like four or five of my family members of seven that are very close with me are engineers.
Mm-hmm. And then were you just thinking about your abilities and what you're good at when you choose to transfer to journalism?
No, I think I was thinking more about my passion and what I'm wanting to do. It also was something that I'm better at, but I think the main motivation for me was something that was rooted in passion.
I definitely can relate because all of my family members are doctors and pharmacists. And of course, you know, coming from an Asian family, they're like, oh, you should be a doctor. But I was very passionate to be a journalist. So that's what I chose at that time.
Now, Harry, did you grew up in China and you had to declare a major before you came to college? How does that work?
Okay. So obviously I applied for U.S. colleges and universities, so I didn't have to. But I knew peers of mine who have to go through that process. So in China, the college admission exam is called Gaokao. It's something that every single student, if they want to study in a Chinese university or college, have to go through. And for them, they have to decide top three major preferences and top three school preferences after they learn about the scores they got from Gaokao, or basically your SAT scores. So for them, essentially means that they would have a really good idea before entering their preferences. So they know, they have to know like what they want to do. Top three. Again, top three majors and top three schools they want to go to.
And this is for teenagers. This is kids who are like
for
a sophomore or a junior.
Yeah, 17-year-old, like going 18.
But you have to say something.
You have to decide.
It's mostly blind choices, but sometimes it's guided by parents.
Yeah.
Now, Zach, what about you? You said you started in engineering because it's kind of the family business. But you told me you weren't really good at math. You
know, so. Yeah.
It's kind of, Mr. Marcus, your bridge will fall down.
Just, I guess, generally, how does the American application process work? Do you have to declare a major before you enter college and university?
Actually, a lot of people don't choose to declare a major before they enter. Most people actually decide to decide on their major about 2 years in their sophomore year. And a lot of people switch their majors too, over 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a very common thing to switch your major or to choose a major.
So what to watch for when you are, applying or, the first 2 years of college, for example, what should you do at that time?
And during the first 2 years of college, you should really just feel out what you enjoy and also what you're good at. The combination of the two of them is going to be where you find your career.
Mm-hmm. Now, a final question for both of you. What would you recommend to students who are coming to the United States as far as choosing your major?
My advice is, follow your guts. If that doesn't work out, you could always explore something else. I never did, but, I know people who do. I feel that then you would just start using resources, talking to career counselor. Every school mostly have career counselor. They can help you figure out, what you've been doing so far and what you can do with your existing skills and how that much of a skill is transferable to something you might want to pursue later.
The most important thing to keep in mind when you're trying to figure out your major is just to take your time with it. For me especially, I wish I would have taken more time in deciding my major because I started with something that I didn't like. And then I ended up choosing something that I did like, but it took me a while to do that. And then it also put me behind. I think probably the best thing to do is just to follow your heart, but also to follow what your parents may tell you is your best skill set. You'd be surprised that they know you a lot better than you think.
All right, gentlemen, we will have to leave it there. Our congratulations to Harry Chen, graduate of Penn State University and the City University of New York, and also to Zach Marcus, who is going to be graduating from the University of Maryland. Congratulations, buddy.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Thank you.
And Lynn, thanks.
Thank you. Thanks for being with us for this premiere edition of VOA's Campus Connection.
And thanks to our interns, Sana Ali, Harry Chin, Zach Marcus.
Let us hear from you. You can look for us at voanews.com or on the VOA Asia Facebook page.
You can also email us at voaasia@voanews.com.
And you can share your stories with us. What's your experience studying either at home or here in the United States? We'd love to hear from you.
And send us your photos. Post them to facebook.com/voaasia.
Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
And I'm Lin Yang. Be sure to join us for another edition of VOA's Campus Connection.